There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby!
That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you here. Ways to get in touch with the show, several out there. First of all, the Mallory Piping text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Same digits for a good old-fashioned phone call. And you can use the talkback feature on the FM Talk 106.5 app to send us a message. We can play it back here on the show as well. If you haven't gotten the app yet, go grab it. If you're on a iPhone, you know, user, go to the App Store. If you use if you're cool like me, this drives my kids crazy. If you're a hip guy that uses an Android phone, you go to Google Play. But both places, just look for FMTALK 1065. That's our app. You see our logo. It's free. Download it. Streams the station. Does all kind of cool stuff. But in addition, gives you that talkback feature where you can record a message and send it to the show. All right, we got those things out of the way. And this, as I start our conversation with our guest, Speaker Pro Tem of the Alabama House and District 101, Representative Chris Pringle. I had on my list that we were going to talk about the new State House build, and then you said, did you go look at my Facebook? And I just did. Those are pictures of the new State House build. Cool stuff. What's was that yesterday? When did you take that picture?
Well, first, I always have to give a shout-out to my sweet mother.
That's right, listening. Your mama, yes.
And my beautiful new bride, Laura.
To so, both of those ladies,
yeah.
Shout
well,
out.
Yeah, we topped the building off yesterday, and I was allowed to go in with the architects and construction management people.
Is that because you're a construction guy? Did you say, well, hey, man, not only am I a speaker pro tem, but I'm a construction guy, too.
Yeah, but I'm also a chairman of legislative council. I'm the House chairman of legislative council, and that's my name on the bottom, me and Senator Gavan's name on the bottom of the contract.
Does Gavan know about building?
No, he's an attorney.
You outrank. Hey, you got all those, and you actually know how to build stuff.
It's beautiful. It's going to be such
pictures were something.
Building.
Yeah, people can go. I mean, I saw them on your Facebook page, but they were. I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know what I thought it was going to look like. You know, I didn't have a picture in my head of it, but it's really good looking from what, you know, the pictures I saw, and big. I don't know what parts I'm looking at in these pictures, but.
The oval shape hole in the ceiling.
Yeah, what is that?
That's that three-story atrium as you come in the front of the building.
Okay.
And just behind it will be the grand staircase that goes up to the second floor. And then the other buildings, you can see where we're looking out. Those are going to be some of the committee meeting rooms that when that picture. Okay. When the State House is torn down, you'll have a direct view of the Capitol. I had to go get kind of a corner, but it's going to be, yeah, that building, the half-moon shape opening, that's going to be the new House chamber.
Okay.
So no longer are we going to have those big columns in the middle.
Coming through the middle of them, yeah.
So we'll be able to see everybody.
You know, I wonder if, I've been thinking about this, and he's doing it honestly, y'all. I know Jeff. One of the bigger selling points, we've talked about the reason, the need for the new State House, and I took a lot of friction for this, but I said, I'm an Alabama guy. I want, when somebody comes to our State House, I'm proud of my state. I want it to be something I can be proud of. Right? I mean, that's sure. as we spend money on things. But number two, we've talked about the issues in that building. And Jeff does, you know, Wednesdays up there. And he has been sick every Wednesday with mold in that
mold
building.
Where
I think he's in Stat Haggett's office, I think. And he's been getting just, you hear him start the show. And I mean, I did shows up there and I probably will in the future as well. But he just get progressively through the 2 or 3 hours of his show, he goes,
oh, it's terrible.
That's a real thing.
You know, the legislative council before me voted to not spend any more money on the building. They went up on the eighth floor to do some remodeling, and the contractor quit. There was so much mold they brought in a hazmat team, full hazmat suits to take the walls down.
Well, and it's, I know you've dealt with this and what you do, and I bought a house one time that I did sell that had it in there, but I was like, yeah, we can mitigate it. And I did, had some companies come in and do some great stuff. Okay, they got rid of 85% of it, but I was like, I still can't move. They said, we've done everything we can do. I said, guys, y'all did a great job, but yeah, there's still some I can't move my kids in here.
It's very difficult to get rid of all of it once it gets in. But you know, the whole basement of the current state house is abandoned. You don't go into it. It's just completely abandoned. If you go into the old offices, all the sheetrock.
So from where you walk in down, I've never been down.
Well, you come in on the second floor.
Right.
The first floor is where, like, APT, public television, mm-hmm, there's a couple meeting rooms down there, but there's actually a floor below that that's completely abandoned.
Huh.
All the sheetrock's cut off about 2 feet above the concrete because it floods all the time.
Okay. What is the timeline for this? I mean, these pictures of when's going to be the big ribbon cutting? The big giant scissors and all that stuff.
We will move in January of 27.
Okay.
The contractor told me yesterday. He said, "We're hiding in the bushes right now. When you Sonny die week after next,
yeah,
the bulldozers will come into the parking lot between the state house and the Folsom building, and they will bulldoze that parking lot." Little parking we have now, we're about to lose almost all of it. And the goal is to have the new parking deck built before we come back next January.
Unless y'all got to come for a special session.
Well, we'll talk about that. So we're building the parking deck, but the HVAC equipment on top of the state house serves the Capitol. So we have to build the parking deck.
It runs the whole way to the under the street over there?
Exactly, yeah. And it's controlled out of Atlanta. So we're going to put new HVAC equipment on top of the parking deck and hide it, tie it into the Capitol so that when we move out of the state house or to the new state house, we can tear the old state house down and the Capitol will still have HVAC equipment.
So this could go on the builder side of it. You've seen but it's exciting that it's something is happening and has happened.
Public parking on that parking deck also.
You know what? It's worth talking about because this is kind of inside. If people don't go to Montgomery, they don't know. But I'll say this as a media member: it's parking's not the easiest thing when y'all are in session. It's not. That's an understatement. It's not the easiest thing for me to park somewhere, even as media member, and get there.
I mean, right now we're on this big transparency and openness. The new state house, every single committee meeting will be live streamed. The proceedings in both chambers will be live streamed. You can sit in Mobile or in Paris, France, and watch the Alabama legislature in committee and on the floor.
No, it's a good thing. I mean, heck, you know, even at city council level, you know, I watch Mobile City Council, and I'm like, okay, we hear about the things that happened, you know, in the House, and then we have to go back and try to, we should be able to access that easily as citizens.
But the work's done in committee.
Right, in committee, so a lot, although sometimes some of the grandstanding goes on. On the floor.
Because there are cameras out there.
Yes, yes.
Whenever you introduce cameras, you introduce grandstanding.
Do you think, but the committees when, you know, because we hear the reporting of, well, this didn't even make it to a vote, or this person voted this, you know, this discussion in committee, we'll be able to watch all that.
Exactly. Okay. Which is important. We have two committee rooms that live stream, but most of them don't.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever, I've seen video from in committee meetings, but I don't know if that's not somebody in the media videoing it while they're sitting there. You know what I'm saying? There's not but the live
probably
stream.
Probably a combination thereof.
I'm trying to think how I saw that.
Yeah.
But 2027 for the new state house build going in.
Yes. Okay. It's going to be a very tight schedule, but right now we're on schedule and we're on budget, I'm proud to tell you.
Keep it that way.
Well, it's really a great deal. I mean, you know, Dr. Bronner was there yesterday, and we didn't float bonds. We didn't have to pay the bond attorneys. Dr. Bronner agreed to build this building for us. We started paying him a couple of years ago, and he's deposited that money. And once we spend
it's a monthly thing or some checks up front?
We make an annual payment to him. But he's drawn against that money to build the building. Once he spends everything we've given him, then the interest, the 8% interest kicks in, and we go to that cost plus, you know, that 8%. But we think we've cut our annual payments in half by doing this.
Because at the end of this, though, RSA owns it, and the state of Alabama pays rent, right?
Well, interesting. We used to pay rent on the state house to the finance department, but the finance didn't want to deal with it anymore because it's such a piece of garbage. They basically gave it to us and said, here, you have it.
Okay.
So what we've got is a 25-year rent to own. that at any point in time, we can pay it off. And we've reduced our payments tremendously by the way we've done this. But my advice is don't pay it off. Because for 25 years, when the elevator breaks, you just call Dr. Briner and say, hey, come fix my elevator. Mm-hmm. When the air conditioner breaks, he's got a team up there that's amazing the way they maintain those buildings. And they're very good and very professional at it. And I'm like, y'all, let him.
So at the end of 25 years, so it will be.
It will paid. Be. The, yeah, it'll be belong to the legislature.
All right, let's talk about just a couple more days left. What do you think? Y'all go back for 2 days next week? What do you think?
We go in Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
Which a normal legislative week is we go in and we're in session on Tuesday. Wednesday, spin in committee, and then we're in session Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we're just going to be in session Tuesday and Wednesday.
I mean, isn't there usually some time left at the end in case there's a veto issue or something like that?
We're going to adjourn Wednesday and come back the following Wednesday. That gives us the 7 days we need in case the governor wants to veto something. We can override the veto. And then on next Wednesday,
So 2 weeks from yesterday will be sine die,
yep.
You think?
Sine
die. All right. So as we look at this, and we'll talk a little bit, of course, we'll talk a lot about this when we get back from the break, but give me your score. You've been doing this a long time. This session, is it a A, B, C, D, E? Yeah, I mean, F. For some reason, we didn't have E's. A, B, C, D, F. I mean, how'd you score this session?
I think it's been a good session. you know, let me go back to this. Sine die is Latin for forever.
Mm-hmm.
And when I make the motion, Mr. Speaker, I move the House stand in adjournment, sine die. That means the journal of the House is closed forever. That session of the legislature is done, is gone, and you can never go back and open that journal again, which is important because the Supreme Court ruled in 1784, that you can never challenge a piece of legislation based on legislative actions.
Explain that to me.
You can't go back and sue and say, that bill's not valid because it didn't go to the right committee or, you know, they didn't vote right in the committee or something.
Okay.
It's, when we close our journal, that's it. You can never challenge the legislative process. Because you see how much litigation we have anyway.
Sure.
You can challenge it on constitutional grounds, but you can't challenge it on process grounds.
Okay.
So that motion closes out that session of the legislature.
Yeah, y'all don't reopen. Yeah, you don't reopen the House and reopen the Senate when y'all come back for the next session.
It's a whole new session.
Okay.
Whole new book.
Okay. So. We'll go to the news. Come right back. More with the educator here and also Speaker Pro Tem, District 101 Representative Chris Pringle, our guest this hour on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:21 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along on this Friday. Good to get Representative Speaker Pro Tem Chris Pringle in studio. So thought it was a good session. I mean, it's not completely over yet, but a good session. Anything surprise you? I mean, because a lot of times coming in from my perspective, so just citizen, but somebody who's in this business, I start hearing it's going to be, I don't know, this is going to be the big thing. This is going to be, you know, and kind of tracking ahead. Were you surprised by anything this year or the...
Not particularly. I mean, I knew we were going to have that, you know, the alpha health insurance or alpha health policy bill. And we've had, you know, the RTDs.
We get to RTDs.
All that, I mean, it's always been kind of lurking. You just never know what's going to really bubble up to the top.
The gambling thing will be like some years I hear it's coming and it doesn't come. Some years I don't hear much about it and it seems to have more presence. It's odd to me. I mean, there's always going to be a discussion of it, but some years it seems to move up more.
The Speaker made it perfectly clear that he addressed the gambling issue last session, and he made it perfectly clear, do not send a gambling bill to the House unless it's very close or exactly what we sent to the Senate that they killed, because he would not bring it up. Because once that hits the floor, it sucks all the oxygen out of the room.
It becomes everything in that session.
And I'm going to tell you, Nathaniel Ledbetter, this is my fifth speaker, and he's amazing. I mean, he is absolutely amazing. We sit in those leadership meetings on Tuesday morning, and everybody's at the table, the chairman, but more importantly, the minority leaders in the table. When I was the minority leader of the House, we weren't invited to leadership meetings. We were completely ignored by the Democrats. They had nothing to do with us. But Anthony's invited, or his you know, replacements are invited, and they have input. And you'll see the speaker ask, you know, they'll tell us what bills that are on that proposed calendar they have problems with, and we'll do everything we can to work it out. And oftentimes when you see me in the chair, the speaker's out actually in the chamber. Okay. But he's working with people to try and come up with amendments to fix a bill that we can all agree to.
Do you think Ledbetter's done a better job of keeping that derailing by the minority out?
Oh, yeah. He's done a very
moving things along?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen certain members that they're just told, you're not going to be called on for the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
We'll let you speak, but you're not going to disrupt this chamber.
Because it hadn't always been that way.
No, but Nathaniel's very fair, but he's extremely firm, and that's just the way he is. But that's the reason why things work so well in the House, because he treats everybody well, but he's very, you know, we're gonna do the people's business. We're not going to play these other games.
You mentioned RTDs, and I've talked about it through the session, then I've got a couple people been texting the show to get more information about it, and I said, okay, well, I got, you know, Chris Pringle coming in. So where it's in the Senate's hands now? What's the latest here?
Well,
and RTDs, these are
ready to drinks.
There's like, you know, the pre-made margarita or something like that, right?
What you have now, when you're in the convenience store and you see those ready-to-drink margaritas or hard iced teas, whatever, that is fermented alcohol.
Yeah, it's wine
or
something,
like wine,
right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They make them that are made out of distilled alcohol, vodka, bourbon.
The stuff you get in Florida.
Yeah. You can buy those in Alabama, but you have to buy them at an ABC store or a package store.
Mm-hmm.
What this RTD bill does is they allow you to sell ready to drink with distilled alcohol in them in the gas stations and grocery stores. But there's no franchise agreement in it. So it's whoever wants to go buy a license can start distributing this stuff.
Okay.
And it's...
So who's getting hurt here? Because, I mean, to me, I don't, like, if it's a place already selling alcohol, why do I care what kind of alcohol somebody wants?
Well, there are multiple arguments, and this has been the problem because I served on the committee with Livingston and Andy Witt. We tax spirituous liquors at a much higher rate than we tax fermented or malted alcohol, all right? So if we applied the tax on RTDs that we apply to liquor, a case of, you know,
pre-made margaritas,
would be like $68. But you can buy it in the gas station now made out of fermented alcohol for, you know, $24.
Is the alcohol content by volume the same?
That's it. No. That's the problem. Where do you set the alcohol by volume in each one of these? Because some of them are higher and some of them are lower. I think this one was set at like 7%, which is about twice what...
This would be beer is. Yeah.
But some of those IPAs get that high, but table wine's like 14%. It's much higher.
Would you have to change the ABV levels to be able to have this in the...
The last version of that bill that I read had the alcohol by volume set at 7%. and the RTDs that were sold with spirituous liquor.
And they can make that, or they can't?
Oh, yeah, they can make it. Yeah.
They can make the...
Yes.
So, okay, if I'm just hayseed enough to say, if the ABV is the same, I don't care what, if somebody wants to, I mean, I drink beers, but if somebody wants to drink the margarita pre-made, what do I care?
I went to the floor and I said, I don't have a problem with RTDs. I think we ought to sell them. It's just another product on the market.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is lowering the tax on them because we're going to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to have the revenue we were. But the franchise is my problem. We have these beer distributors that have proven time and time again that they are responsible vendors. They can go out, they can distribute these alcoholic products throughout the entire state. You know, you have to pay cash in the barrelhead when that truck rolls up. Mm-hmm. You cannot buy alcohol on credit. It has to be paid for right there on the spot. But I don't. There's nothing in the bill that addresses whether they can sell it on these RTDs with credit, because we don't know who's going to get the distribution rights. And you know, do they have the ability to handle it?
Wait, this goes to so many things in our state, though. If you, in my opinion, if you set, here are the parameters.
Yeah.
And we could talk about gaming or medical marijuana or whatever. If the state says, here's what you have to live up to, anybody that lives up to that and checks those boxes and pays whatever their fee is, I think should be able to compete.
I agree with you totally. But we need to make sure that we know what those boxes are going to be.
Sure, sure. So, because, I mean, you know, anytime I get pushback, I mean, somebody with the ABC years ago said people like Sean Sullivan want kids drunk in the street. And I said, no, I don't. Yeah. I'm just saying I want there to be, set the standards, and then whatever people want to risk private capital to compete should be allowed to compete.
Exactly. Okay. As long as they can meet the standards.
Meet the standards. 100%. All right, coming right back. More with Chris Pringle next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday edition of the show. And Speaker Pro Tem, District 101 Representative Chris Pringle in the studio with us. I'm going to grab a couple questions from the Mallory Piping text line. Matthew, ask Chris Pringle why the state of Alabama won't properly fund the court systems in Mobile County. We need more judges. It should not take 2 or 3 years for a trial to occur. Criminal trials should be held within 6 months of a crime occurring. This is a public safety issue. Changes need to occur. Mobile County courts need more judges and more funding.
I totally agree. And, you know, we finally fought and passed that allocation committee for the allocation of judges in the different districts. And I think we are owed at least one or two. The problem is Jefferson County is not willing to give up their judges.
Okay.
You know, it's just a fight. You know, Jefferson County.
Billy in Fowl River says, what do you think about closing the ABC stores, the retail portion?
It's amazing how many people have come to Montgomery, and I was one of them. I couldn't understand why we were in the business.
I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I still don't understand.
Not only does it make the state a lot of money, but, you know, my best friend in the world, his family owns 300 liquors. 300. Many of which you've probably...
Liquor stores?
Buffalo Trace.
Sazerac. Oh, liquors. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Pappy Van Winkle, E.H. Taylor.
Wow. So, drop me his contact.
I've talked to their people because they're an international company. And it's the states that have done away with their state-controlled liquor and they go to just privatization, your selection drops precipitously. Because I don't understand it. But
in Louisiana, I can buy, and they got everything.
Yeah, yeah. My buddy owned a distribution network in Louisiana at one time and sold it. But
we have less.
It's very hard because
it just doesn't seem like it to me. And I know you know the inner workings of things, but me on the outside, it just doesn't seem like something the government should be doing. I mean, it just seems like if the government got in the business of selling hamburgers, you know, then people would be like, why are you competing with the private enterprise?
Well, it's an age-old question. But, you know, then you'd have the big retail chains that have their own distribution networks would basically overrun most of the mom-and-pop shops because everybody would be going to the big grocery stores, the big box stores, and buying all their liquor. But it's a revenue stream also. I mean, how are you going to replace the revenue? I mean, as much as people don't want to hear this, we are one of the lowest tax states in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we make a lot of revenue off what we call sin taxes.
Yeah, sin taxes and sales taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'll come back to these. I want to ask you this, and we'll keep these texts coming. We'll get these. But I want to ask you this question. I think maybe not the last time, but you came on a lot with us during this redistricting discussion. And we don't have to go back how much I don't like what happened. You didn't like, you know, what I mean, you understand the job that Chris Pringle took on is like onerous is an understatement of this. And go through this whole process because of federal decision here. Now there's a question. Louisiana is probably the most important one, what they're making a decision on. They went through something similar to us, right?
Exactly. The courts ruled, which I never understood because you read the Voting Rights Act, it clearly states that nothing in this act should be construed that you get representation based on the percentage of your population.
Right.
And the courts have now ruled because of the percentage of the population, you have to draw these districts.
VRA was like said, you don't use race.
Well, yeah. The court told us in 2017 we relied too heavily on race when we drew our legislative districts, and we had to go back and redraw them, quote, race neutral.
Okay.
So
and then what? Then they come back and tell you to draw them
after the 20 census.
Race biased.
Yeah. Then they came back and said, no, you have to rely exclusively on race to do this. And they did it to us, and they did it again in Louisiana. And we had a trial in November over the state Senate districts in Birmingham in front of the 3-judge federal panel in Birmingham. I will note the House plan is not under litigation that I drew, but the Senate plan, and Bobby Singleton had also filed a lawsuit the same time as the Milligan suit, the famous Milligan mm-hmm. that we got the court ruling on. And the court stayed the Singleton case, but they heard it in February. They carried it. So we've got the court sitting on a ruling in the state Senate and on the Bobby Singleton congressional challenge. In March, the Supreme Court heard the arguments out of Louisiana.
And it's similar enough to
It's similar, yes. Okay. There's some of the same questions. So what we expect to happen is the Supreme Court is going to drop a ruling in June right as they walk out of the door at the end of their term, mm-hmm. which is what they're famous for. Mm-hmm. We don't know if they're going to come down with one of these major court rulings like the Jingles or Reynolds v. Sims or these earth-shattering opinions. Or they're just going to kind of
be some semantic thing. Yeah.
Because what the court's a master of is not telling us what we can do, is they tell us what we can't do after the fact.
Yeah.
So I know those judges are waiting to see what the Supreme Court rules in Louisiana when they drop it, probably June. We're figuring 6 to 8 weeks after that, they're going to hand down a ruling in both the state Senate and the congressional districts.
Okay.
So I don't think those judges are going to reverse themselves unless they absolutely have to on the congressional. Does that make sense? I mean, judges don't really like reversing themselves.
No.
So I don't think they're going to
it's foggy in my memory, but maybe I remember something to the effect they said, well, they weren't asked. They can only judge on the questions they were asked, and the right question wasn't asked or something like that.
Yeah. Kavanaugh wrote in his dissent on the Supreme Court that it had the state attorney argued the case before the court, he would have voted with us, but we didn't make the argument on the case that was before the court. You have to argue it.
So therefore, if you make it, then Kavanaugh changes his vote.
If they had made the arguments based on the case before them, yes, but they didn't argue that. But let me caution you, and this is weird to tell you, the attorneys that guided me that had been doing reapportionment in the state of Alabama for 25 years, he did it when the Democrats were in charge and he did it when I was in charge. Excellent lawyer. Had no standing in the lawsuits. He couldn't file an amicus brief. He couldn't sit at the table. He couldn't make an argument in front of any of the judges.
Was he not a citizen of Alabama? What would he get in standing, I guess?
The lawsuits are actually not against us. They're actually against the Secretary of State and the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to rely on the lawyers they put before us, not the lawyers that helped us guide us through it.
Okay.
But this time in the state Senate and the congressional, the Attorney General gave DAG appointments, Deputy Attorney General appointments, to those attorneys who represented us in front of the judges, the guys that know the law and that really could argue it. So it's going to be interesting to see how it comes out.
If, let's say, if they don't change anything, it stays the way it is. Let's say they come back and overrule themselves. Will there be a redrawing of 1 and 2 or go back to the lines from before? Or what could you picture?
There, if they reverse themselves, There will have to be a special session, but until we read what the court has ordered, what the court says, I can't answer that.
I mean, so, but if the court came back, okay, and said we were wrong. I wouldn't word it. I wouldn't word it that way. But you know, just give me some grace here. They say, well, we were wrong. We screwed that up. Then at that point afterwards, a special is called.
Yes.
Legislature comes back into session. Governor calls back into session, and y'all then you go back to work and redrawing.
Yes, we will reconstitute the full reapportionment committee.
Can you go right back to what it was? Could you?
Depends on what they rule. I can't say yes or no. It depends on what the court tells us. But we'll reappoint the reapportionment committee. We will go back in. We'll have the committee will come in and start drawing a plan. The committee will pass a plan. We'll have to have public hearings. We'll have to have all the same thing we did before, that whole long, drawn-out process. And then the committee will pass a plan. It'll be put into bill form and introduced into the legislature. And then after we pass it, we have to submit it back to the courts. And the courts either accept it or reject it. If they reject it, then they will hire another cartographer, is what happened last time, mm-hmm. and they will draw their own plan and put it in place.
But that could go on for...
Well, it can't go on long because qualifying deadline is February 20th.
Yeah, but wouldn't it go past that? They'd have to have it done.
Yeah, they're going to have to do something quickly. Okay. See, that's what happened last time.
But Supreme Court, like you said, they will drop this on their way. I agree. Yeah. On the June 23rd, or whatever.
Yeah. On Friday of June.
And they're going to leave. Then you said there's a 6 to 8 week window.
We're assuming 6 to 8 weeks for the court to digest what was said in the Supreme Court ruling and apply it back to these cases.
Okay, so that makes, August September.
Yeah. And September, we're not going to be able to meet. We'll probably have to meet in October or November.
So a special session, let's say, and this is all conjecture. October, November, special session. Yeah. You go back in. Then that decision... You vote on something, you get it. You have to get it done, and you vote on that, and then that goes back to the court.
Yes, it goes back to the federal court in Birmingham.
Okay, so that's going to be December.
And they have to rule, and we'll have to get something quickly turned around in January. But let me go back.
Okay.
Remember, we don't have a parking lot anymore. After
that's right.
During Sonny Dye,
yeah.
There's no parking up there.
Right. I'll have to bring y'all in on shuttle buses or something. Coming right back with Speaker Pro Tem of the Alabama House, Chris Pringle.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right at 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Read some more texts from the Mallory Piping text line. Plus, we'll take phone calls at 343-0106. Same number for a text and a phone call. Our guest, Speaker Pro Tem, District 101, Representative Chris Pringle. We grab this one from Dirt Digger. Said, I hope they'll make a bill that will never tax our overtime ever again. We work for ourselves and families, not to be taxed for everything the state wants. Let's talk about that. Yeah, the overtime tax bill, which is Minority Leader Daniels.
Yeah, he brought the bill, and the fiscal note said it was like $30 million.
Yeah, help me with this. Chris is a real smart guy, and your numbers guy, how did they miss it that badly?
Because we found out later, nobody was tracking overtime.
Did they just do a wag on this?
They just guessed because we didn't have any history of what people were in Alabama were being paid in overtime versus regular wages. And, it was like $35 million, and it came in at like $380 million hit to the Education Trust Fund. And remember this. All income taxes paid in the state of Alabama, 95% of that money must go to teacher salaries. So if you take $380 million out of the general fund, that's less money you have to pay the teachers in the state.
Well, yeah, but the ETF, at another record ETF.
$12.1 billion.
Yeah.
But out of that, you have to pay, that's 4-year colleges, that's the 2-year college system, plus all K-12. And see, we've just redone the funding formula through K-12. I mean, we were under the foundation program that was passed, years and years ago when we did it, amount of money per student. And now they've gone in and it's based on needs. It's interesting with this explosion of autism in mm-hmm. our communities, yeah. what it's done to our schools and how many students now have special needs. Mm-hmm. And, there are institutions in our community that teach parents how to get their children declared mentally disabled. They I talked to a girl the other day, just ran into her. She said they come in, you know, with check sheets. Mm-hmm. So they say everything they need to say to have that child declared disabled so they can get Social Security disability money from them. So the amount of disabled children in our schools is also exploding.
But there are real, I mean, the number of cases, and my problem is I don't have a benchmark. Yeah. I wasn't, you know, aware 50 years ago or, you know, beyond. But there are real cases and, like, that I didn't see growing up, and that maybe people didn't talk about it, but I definitely see it. I've got, you know, I've got children that are you know, from 14 to 19 years old in those cohorts. I mean, it's there. Now, yeah, I mean, are some people game? Sure, people game the system, but there are. Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, exactly. What are you going to do with those folks? We don't want to leave them behind.
Well, we've got.
Because there's different levels of autism, too. There's some that you're like, there's no question. And then there's some that are like, okay, well, do you put them in a regular school and challenge them to be able to get through there, or where do they go? So I don't know.
Exactly. But back to the income, the tax and overtime, you know, that's the reason why the House passed all those other tax cut bills to give relief. We reduced grocery tax, and, you know, we cut a bunch of other taxes that we could project to know. We had the numbers.
Yeah, I was for the grocery tax cut, too.
Yeah, we're trying to, but, you know, that one just caught us. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, to me, the grocery tax thing should have been the easiest move because it would be bipartisan. I could make I could find Democrats that support it, and I could find Republicans. And to me, it was like the people we want to encourage. These are people that are not on public assistance.
Yeah,
these are people, but they're working.
Yeah.
And you know what? $100 back in their pocket or something is a big deal.
Exactly.
And this is not on things they want. These are on things they need. Groceries. To me, it just makes sense.
Oh, yeah, and that's the reason why we want to do it. But, you know, we've done so much in the last couple of years to try and, you know, increase our workforce participation rate. We have the lowest in the nation. We just can't get people to work.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We do talk about this on the station a bunch. I think we just heard the numbers today, like 4.1% or something. You'll have an unemployment rate, and you say, oh, that's not bad, but that's the people that are actually trying to get a job.
Exactly.
But then, you know, when Fitzgerald Washington was on talking about the number of people that were, and I don't know how it works. You just don't keep trying to find a job or do something else so you don't show up on the stats.
Exactly. You're off the radar. You're not working. You're the age to work, but they're just not working. We only have like a 57-58% workforce participation rate.
And that is how the people that are of working age, that's taking out children and elderly.
Yeah, exactly.
And only 57% of those people. Yeah. What are the rest of the people doing?
We're desperately trying to find out. Because, I mean, behind the scenes, we have done so much to lay the groundwork for economic development in this state. Yeah, we're developing these super sites, you know, where you can have a Hyundai plant or, you know, like the place in Baldwin County that's developing.
The thing, yeah.
We're developing these sites because people are looking for them. And we passed a whole series of bills this week directed towards helping facilitate the development of those facilities when people come calling. And we've done workforce development, education. There's been package after package of stuff we've done to lay the groundwork so we can attract these big industries to come into the state of Alabama and hire our people. But now we got to have people, A, willing to work, or B, that are trained to do the job.
Well, okay, well, there's the rub, because several cogs to that wheel, Congressman, CEO and chairman of the Mobile Chamber, Bradley Burns, sits there a lot and will come in here and tell me they're incentivizing bringing people in from elsewhere for these jobs. And yes, they become citizens or this and that, but I'm like, what about the people that are here? I mean, I can make the argument on the other side. I see all these packages for big business passed and tax incentives and tax breaks. I'm like, hey, what about the Sean Sullivans of the world? What about the small business people here in the world? We've been here doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do this and then you're going to import people in as well, to me, it's a double insult.
We reduced state corporate tax.
Yeah.
That $250 a year we had to pay every year just to have a company filed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going away.
That's good. Now we can, you know, talk about the business property tax thing here, you know, at length. I've explained to people I have a weird position doing a talk show and also owning a business, and people thought I was joking at first and I did too when I finally was the dog that caught the car and bought this place, and they said, hey, you've got to file this. And I said, not like everything in the office. They said, yeah, everything in the office. And I mean, I said, like a stapler? They said, yeah, like a stapler. I pay, you know, I make this joke that a lot of the chairs back here in the back came from the dumpster when the federal offices in this building or the charities would get new stuff. I would drag their chairs in. The couch and chairs in the living room here from my mama's house got recovered. I mean, that's, you know, they're nice. They got recovered. But I mean, that's, this is stuff that came from mama's house. Some stuff came from my house, and I pay taxes on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not even the stuff I use to make radio. Let's see. The one penny grocery tax that they had to give back. Oh, yeah. Well, it does seem like it was built to not be able to continue the cut to the grocery tax. It seems like if you see any, what's the growth has to be in the ETF, a certain
like
percentage?
2.3% or something.
And if anything below that, then you can't do it. It did seem to me like, okay, here you go, Sullivan, shut up, I cut it, but it's not going to keep going.
Our tax system fluctuates greatly. And I've been there when the bottom falls out, because it's based on sales tax. Yeah. And when the bottom falls, we run out of money very quickly. And that's what we're
proration days.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible. That's the reason why we've managed the money we have. We created those rainy day accounts, and we funded them. We've got money set aside, because when the economy slows, we're going to be okay for a while, as long as it doesn't stay down too long. Because we don't want to prorate. Because, you know, if you have a 5% proration, all 5% of your entire budget comes out of the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got schools trying to start back up in August and September, and that's the last quarter of the year. And all of a sudden, they lose 5% of their entire budget the last, you know, couple months.
No, yeah.
The beginning of the school year.
I don't want to see that, but also just want to make sure we're making the right choices of where we get that. And are we going to do a wholesale change to the tax structure in Alabama anytime soon? I don't know, but I'm looking at you.
So much of it is earmarked by law and constitutional amendment. It's very hard to change it because it's all earmarked. We don't have the ability to move it around from column to column.
No, that's 93% earmarked in the general, something like that.
Exactly.
Appreciate your time. Please come back soon.
I will. Thank you.
Speaker Pro Tem Chris Pringle, our guest, will be back in just a minute after the news. We'll